ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जायमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः।
ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 25 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द कैरेक्टरिस्टिक्स ऑफ किंग पुरंजन। Verse 17.
Puryaste bahyo pavane, bahyo pavane, divya drumalata kule, drumalata kule, nadad vihangali kula, kali kula, kola hal jalashaye. पुर्यास्तु बाह्यो पवने, पुर्यास्तु बाह्यो पवने, दिव्य द्रुमलता कुले, द्रुमलता कुले, नदद विहंगाली कुल, कोलाहल जलाशये। पुर्यास्ते बाह्यो पवने, दिव्य द्रुमलता कुले, नदद विहंगाली कूल कोलाहल जलाशये।
Word to word translation, Puryaha of that town, Tu then, Bahaya Upavane, in an outside garden, Divya, very nice, Druma, trees, Lata, creepers, Akule, filled, nadat, vibrating, vihanga, birds,
Ali these kula groups of kolahala humming jalashaye with a lake.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: on the outskirts of that city were many beautiful trees and creepers encircling a nice lake. Also surrounding that lake were many groups of birds and bees that were always chanting and humming. Purport: since the body is a great city, there must be various arrangements such as lakes and gardens for sense enjoyment. Of the various parts of the body, those which incite sexual impulses are referred to here indirectly. Because the body has genitals, when the living entity attains the right age, be he man or woman, he becomes agitated by sex impulse. As long as one remains a child, he is not agitated by seeing a beautiful woman. Although the sense organs are present, unless the age is ripe, there is no sex impulse. The favorable conditions surrounding the sex impulse are compared here to a garden or a nice solitary place. When one sees the opposite sex, naturally the sex impulse increases. It is said that if a man in a solitary place does not become agitated upon seeing a woman, he is to be considered a brahmachari. But this practice is almost impossible. The sex impulse is so strong that even by seeing, touching or talking, coming into contact with, or even thinking of the opposite sex, even in so many subtle ways, one becomes sexually impelled. Consequently, a brahmachari or sannyasi is prohibited to associate with women, especially in a secret place. The shastras enjoin that one should not even talk to a woman in a secret place, even if she happens to be one's own daughter, sister or mother. The sex impulse is so strong that even if one is very learned, he becomes agitated in such circumstances. If this is the case, how can a young man in a nice park remain calm and quiet after seeing a beautiful young woman?
Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Itinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadeshitarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratushe Namaha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpataru Bhascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna.
So we seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas, especially senior Vaishnavas like His Grace Tathavit Prabhu, Rajhari Prabhu, that I can speak something worthwhile for the glorification of the Lord and for the purification of my filthy heart. So here, this very remarkable story in the Srimad Bhagavatam of Narad Muni instructing Maharaj Prachina Parishad through the method of an allegory. Allegory is a symbolic story. So we see in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says in 4.2 that Evam Raj Rishiyo Viduhu, that this knowledge is given to the Raj Rishis. So we saw a few verses earlier that the Prachetas are delivered by Lord Shiva. And Prachini Parishad is delivered by Narad Muni. So the great saintly people are always trying to deliver the world. And for the purpose of delivering the world, they are always trying to reach the people who influence the world. You see that Lord Krishna did not speak the Bhagavad Gita to just some ordinary person on the street. He spoke it to a Raj Rishi. Why? Because if one Raj Rishi is influenced, then he can influence thousands of people. But sometimes people have this notion that ISKCON is for the wealthy people. Actually, there is no guard at the door of ISKCON temples checking your income certificate to show you whether you are wealthy or not. But we follow the example of Lord Krishna. You know, we focus on people who influence society. So when we go to colleges, we try to go to top colleges. When we approach people, we approach the influential people in society. Not because they are more dear to Krishna than others, but because if they become devotees, they can influence thousands of other people. So, our temples are open for everyone and anybody can come in and practice Krishna consciousness. And if somebody is interested, then the poorest of poor people will be given the spiritual guidance and facility for practicing. But as far as our focus is concerned, Prabhupada said, try to shoot the rhino, try to go for the big people. So, why? Because one big person can influence thousands of other people. So Narad Muni is a sage who lives in the jungle and he's happy there. But he also has a mission to carry out the mission of the Lord. And so he has come to Prachini Parishad. Prabhupada would give the example of what is the mood of a preacher? The mood of a preacher is like that of the Red Cross doctors on a war field. So the Red Cross doctors on a war field see that there are thousands of people who are injured. And in their heart, they would like to help every one of them. But they have limited manpower, limited facilities. So, among those who are wounded, they see the people who are the least wounded. The people who are most hopeful of survival. And focus on them. Because the others, they may battle for a long time, spend a lot of time, and eventually that person may also die. On the other hand, person is slightly injured, you save him, help him recover, then he can aid in the effort to save others. So a devotee, especially anybody in Prabhupada's mission, has to have a sense of purpose and urgency. Now there are many spiritualists and many of them are non-bona fide, some of them are bona fide. But what distinguished Prabhupada from so many other spiritualists was his sense of purpose and sense of urgency. Prabhupada had a sense of mission around him. And anybody who could have had any association of him, either directly or through his books, cannot avoid getting that impression that, you know, we have a mission. Now, Prabhupada has given many instructions in his books, but a standing instruction for every follower of Prabhupada is to preach. It's a standing instruction for everyone. And if we just read Prabhupada's books, we cannot avoid coming to this conclusion. In fact, because of my service, currently I am editing the English translations of the previous acharyas. Krishna Achyuta Thakur's translations, Bhanu Maharaj is translating, I am editing them. So I am looking at Krishna Achyuta Thakur's commentaries, Baldev Vidyabhushan's commentaries, and they are often very rasic, very erudite, very scholarly. But what distinguishes Prabhupada's commentaries is the call for action. Radha Ras Bihari Bhagwan Ki. So, the distinguishing characteristic of Prabhupada's commentaries is there is a call for action permeating practically every purport that Prabhupada writes. And the previous acharyas, Now they are writing to a more scholarly intellectual audience who has already understood that this world is meant to be transcended, that sense gratification leads to misery, and they don't have to hammer that all the time. But Prabhupada knows that he's speaking to an entirely different audience. Tamal Krishna Maharaj writes in one of his articles that never before in the history of not only just our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, but in the history of Vedic culture, has a teacher had to speak his message to an audience that was entirely different from the original audience of the message. The original audience of Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna. The original audience of the Bhagavatam is the sages of Naimisharanya. Both of them are very deeply steeped in Vedic culture. But Prabhupada had to speak to an audience who were historically, geographically, linguistically, culturally, socio-politically, economically, theologically, religiously, entirely different from the original audience. So it is an enormous challenge. And the way Prabhupada met it is extraordinary. And the proof that Prabhupada met it gloriously is the amount of people that he has transformed. So Prabhupada had that same mood of preaching vigor that Narad Muni personifies. And we see, now Narad Muni, he has also preached and delivered people like Mrugari are very fallen. Here Prachini Barishar is not a fallen person. He is actually doing dharma, but he is doing karma kanda. And Narad Muni is preaching this whole story to him to show how karma kanda is not enough. Actually karma kanda is, according to the standard of our Chaitanya Charitamrita, according to the standard of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, karma kanda, jnana kanda, kevala vishera bhanda. It's just a pot of poison. Now you may think that karma kanda and jnana kanda are taught in the Vedic literature themselves. In fact, the second canto of Bhagavatam is described that when Brahmaji heard the Vedic literature for the first time, he thought that the conclusion of the Vedic literature is karma kanda. Because the sheer profusion of the verses talking about karma kanda, the number of verses about karma kanda in the Vedic literature are much more. And second time he heard it, he thought it was jnana kanda. And then third time he heard it, then he understood. Actually the conclusion is bhakti. So, here, Narad Muni is trying to raise Prachini Parishad from the platform of aparadharma to paradharma. From aparadharma to paradharma. So, we see this song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Vidyara Vilase, or Bhuliya Tomare. Now, if you see the whole theme of the song, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not talking about a hippie or a drug addict or a person who is a failure in life. Vidyara Gaurave Brahmi Deshe Deshe Dhana Uparjana Kori. So here he is describing something very similar to an NRI. You know, we have non-resident Indian. Of course, we have another species nowadays. It is called RNI. Now, what is RNI? Resident non-Indians. Now, those people reside in India, but their mentality is entirely Western. They are enamored of everything Western. Everything Indian is bad, and everything Western is good. And in fact, to some extent, these NRIs, they become more open and inquisitive and sympathetic about their own culture. Because when they go to the West, and in the West, they see face to face the degradation that results because of free mixing. Prabhupada in this purport talks about the free mixing between the sexes. The degradation, the drug addiction, the sheer abysmal standard of life that results. You know, when we hear it in classes, when we hear it from devotees, you know, we still have the media images in our mind of what Santa Barbara is, of what Hollywood is. And it's difficult for us to believe that actually there is no happiness in sense gratification. But when the Indians go to America and they see where unrestricted sense gratification leads to, it just leads to misery. In the 14th chapter, Lord Krishna says, Rajasas tu phalam dukkham. The fruit of the mode of passion is misery. So, when they see that, they actually become more inquisitive about their own culture. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing something very similar. Vidyara gaurave brahmi deshe deshe. So somebody got IIT degree and IIM degree and then he goes from country to country. Brahme deshe deshe dhana uparjana kori. Earned a lot of wealth. And then what does he do? Now, swajana palana kori ekamane. That then, I give my whole life to taking care of my family members. So, some money NRIs who go abroad, they don't care for their family members. They just leave their parents over here. Some of them may give money for their parents and call their parents and take care of their parents. So these, from the material point of view, are considered very successful people. So nice, they went to America, they studied, they made wealth. And now they're not forgotten their parents. They're taking care of their parents also. But even such people, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying? Swajana palana kori ekamane bhulinu tomare hari. In this process, I forgot you, my dear Lord. And then he says, that in my old age, now I have no other shelter, so I take shelter of you. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is showing how the typical success chart, what a modern human being or a modern Indian would follow, that success chart ends in failure. It is a success story turning into a failure story. That materially somebody might be very successful, but still he is a spiritual failure if he does not worship the Supreme Lord. And in India, unfortunately, there is a notion, yesterday evening in the class I was explaining, people think that if I do my family responsibilities properly, I maintain my family, I get my children educated, get them married, get them settled, then I have done my duty. No, Prachini Barishat was fully doing the duty like that. But that duty, taking care of the dependents, even animals do that. That does not make one spiritual. We become spiritual only when we connect ourselves with God and we connect our dependents with God. So Narad Muni is telling Prachini Barishat that you are doing karma kanda, but this karma kanda will simply keep you entangled in the cycle of birth and death. So, even Srila Prabhupada, when he came to India, especially the Hindi lecture that Prabhupada has given, I noticed he often talks about how aparadharma, aparadharma means mundane religion, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, how aparadharma is useless and one has to rise to paradharma. That is especially in his Hindi lectures in India, that is a theme. Because Indians just think if I go to temple once a week and take care of my family, that is, I am doing sufficiently religious activity. But it's no. So, Prachini Parishad is being raised from aparadharma to paradharma. And how is he being raised? Through the medium of a very beautiful story. Allegorical story of a king named Puranjan, who was searching for a place to settle and then enjoy. Brahmi deshe deshe. That's what Puranjan was doing. Searching around. And then finally he came to the city of nine gates. That's an allegorical way of describing the body. And in the city of nine gates, so this is the only section in the Bhagavatam which is directly allegorical. Allegory means a story which is not real, but it symbolizes principles that we can apply in our life. So many of the biblical stories are allegorical. But the Bhagavatam rarely uses allegory. Vaishnava Prabhupada taught us to understand scriptures. Sarvam etad ritan manye yanmam vadasi keshava. As Arjuna, after hearing the Chatushtoki Bhagavad Gita in 10.8 to 11, in 12.13 he accepts Krishna as the Supreme Person. And 14 he says, how do I understand your message? Everything I accept as it did. And Prabhupada taught us, not just Bhagavad Gita, but the whole of Vedic literature. It is to be understood as it is. So where the Bhagavatam says it's an allegory, we accept it to be allegory. Where the Bhagavatam says that it doesn't mention anything about it being allegory, Prabhupada says we have to take it literally. Now most of the commentators in the Bhagavatam try to refer to the fifth canto as allegorical. As the fifth canto especially, the description of the Jambudvipa and the various planetary systems. But Prabhupada told us not only is it to be taken literally, but it is to demonstrate it literally. And that's what the Vedic planetarium which is coming up in Mayapur is all about. The Shastra has to be taken as it is. But this is, when we take Shastra as it is, this is to be taken as an allegory. And in this particular verse, so Puranjan is found a beautiful city, in the corner of which there are lakes. and there are parks and there are hummingbees and there are singing birds and a typical romantic atmosphere is there. And Prabhupada explains that this refers to the parts of the body which are connected with the romantic impulse, the sexual organs. So, Prabhupada is quite uncompromising in pointing out the dangers of sexual indulgence and how they can obstruct one from spiritual advancement. In fact, if you look at the various religious traditions of the world, practically all of them, in their original writings, tell us that if we have to advance spiritually, then we have to decrease our indulgence in the material world. Whether it is the Bible, or the Quran, or the Zend-Avesta, or the Torah, or the Guru Granth Sahib, or the Chinese Confucius teachings, or whatever. All the traditional teachers have told that if one wants to advance spiritually, what to speak of advance spiritually? Even live materially in a healthy and holistic way, one has to control the sexual impulse. You know, many of us have heard of Pythagoras as a great mathematician. Probably none of us have heard that Pythagoras was a brahmachari. He never married. So one of his students asked Pythagoras, when should we have sex? So Pythagoras replied, whenever you want to be weaker than yourself. Whenever you want to be weaker than yourself. So, actually, now Pythagoras is not known to be any especially spiritual person. But even he, just being a material thinker, understood that wasting the vital energy of the body will weaken us. So, even from the material point of view, leave alone the spiritual point of view, unwarranted indulgence is very damaging. And we see the consequences of that coming up in deadly diseases like AIDS nowadays. But even among spiritual teachers, the few who did talk about restricting the senses, in the modern times very few have talked about it. Now when Buddha started his path, he did not talk about Vedas, but he still talked about detachment. Because people were eating meat. So he told that you have to give up eating meat. And he didn't talk just about meat eating. He said that material desire itself is the cause of problem. Asha hi paramam dukkham, nirasha paramam sukham. So initially he did not accept any woman in his fold. And then one of his principal disciples, Ananda, he said, if we don't accept women in our fold, then half of the population will not be able to become Buddhist. So, Buddha replied, if we accept women in our fold, half of the existing Buddhists will not be able to remain Buddhists. So, actually, still of course Buddha accepted eventually, and his followers accepted without a restriction also. But the principle is there, that there has to be caution in the interaction between the male and the female. So the modern culture is entirely opposite. The modern culture is entirely about free mixing. Now, why is it the scripture so strongly tell us that we have to restrict the association with the opposite sex? There are several reasons. The primary reason is that, you know, human culture should bring out the human qualities within a person. Just like, to understand the word culture, let's consider another context where the word culture is used. Those of you who have studied biology or biochemistry, we know there is bacteria culture, there is yeast culture, there is fungus culture. Now what does that mean? Yeast culture means an environment in which the yeast can flourish. So a culture is a conducive environment. So yeast culture is an environment in which the yeast will flourish. So similarly, what is human culture? Human culture means that environment in which the human qualities of a person will flourish. But when there is free mixing between man and woman, then the human qualities don't flourish, the bestial qualities, the animal qualities flourish. As we have a human side, all of us have animal side, a human side, and a divine side. The animal side is just engaged in gross enjoyment. Gross enjoyment. Ahara nidra bhaya maitri. The divine side, we have completely forgotten the gross enjoyment and totally on the spiritual platform. And most of us, at least I am, struggling in between, in the human side. In the human side, we have to struggle to beat down our animal nature and struggle to excavate our divine nature. So, in this human stage, where most of us are, you know, the more we can beat down the animal nature, beat down the propensities for unrestricted eating, sleeping, mating, depending, and bring out the divine nature, the more we can experience inner happiness. The more we can experience that unlimited eternal happiness that is our destiny. But if we are put in an environment where there is constant stimulation of the senses, there is constant opportunity for sense gratification, then the divine side becomes almost forgotten. And we just live on the animalistic platform. And at the animalistic platform, we can't even perceive any spiritual truth, leave alone experience or realize the spiritual truth. So, His Holiness Purnachandra Maharaj tells one incident. He was preaching in Russia and he was telling, "You are not your body." So, after that, he asked for questions. So, one person raised his hand. He said, "If I am not my body, then whose body am I? Whose body am I?" That means people are so convinced that I am the body only. So, if I am not my body, then I must be someone else's body. So, the idea that I can be somebody beyond the body is next to impossible for people to comprehend when they are not having at least some modicum of self-control. So, human culture means that social environment in which our human side will flourish. And for the human side to flourish, we have to curb the animal side from getting nourishment. And that's why in any decent human culture, there is separation of the sexes. There is minimal association between the sexes. Unfortunately, our modern society is exactly the opposite. It systematically brings out the animal side within people. Systematically, scientifically, scrupulously, it shows images and gives us stimuli that bring out the worst animalistic impulses within us. And then it leads to unspeakable degradation and atrocities. So people suffer. It said that when the lust is stimulated in the man becomes like a monster. And when the lust is stimulated in the woman becomes like a witch. So it is not that man is bad or woman is bad, but it is lust that is bad. Lust makes men into monsters and women into witches. That's why Lord Krishna says, Kamesha Krodesha Rajoguna Rajoguna Samudbaha Mahashano Mahapapma Vidhi Enam Ihavairinam. In 3.37 in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ihavairinam. In this world, lust is our greatest enemy. And it is not just our enemy, he says, this is the enemy of the world itself. Iha vairan, Prabhupada translates that, Iha refers to the world. So the enemy of the world. So, actually, it's so vitally important for us to protect ourselves. Now, Srila Prabhupada here in this purport is very strongly saying that we have to control and combat a sexual impulse. So, when I first read Leela Amrit, actually, Prabhupada Leela Amrit was the book that inspired me tremendously. Even to dedicate my life. Of course, I have not dedicated my life till now also. I'm struggling. But whatever externally I have done. So one of the things that struck me very much was the last 5 chapters of the first volume where Prabhupada is struggling in India, and the first 5 chapters of the second volume where Prabhupada is struggling in America. And there also one thing struck me. Prabhupada was here in America in the hippie land, where the rule was, there is no rule. They said the hippies were rebels without a cause and rebels without a pause. That means rebels, generally you rebel against something and you rebel for something. But they were rebels without a cause, they had no cause, and they were rebels without a pause. Whatever authority came, they rebelled against it. So such a situation, Srila Prabhupada went and he preached. And what was he preaching? At one level, he was talking about chanting, helping people to go high. through the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But another level, he was strongly condemning sense gratification. He said, if you want to practice Krishna consciousness, you have to give up illicit sex. So there was a group of locally famous musicians. The hippies themselves were controversial people. So who will be the most famous among the controversial people? Those who are most controversial. So there's a locally famous group of people called the Fugs. They were musicians. And they would write wildly sexual and passionate songs. And their music and songs were very popular among the hippies. So they came for one of Prabhupada's lectures. And they were there for the kirtan and they were also playing music. They liked it. And the devotees were hoping that Prabhupada will not speak anything that will agitate them. That, you know, they are big people. If they become devotees, they can preach so much. And that day, Prabhupada chose to speak on the illusion and the insignificance of sex pleasure. And the Fugs could not believe their eyes and ears. You know, for them, sex was like their worshipable deity. And Prabhupada was doing aparadha against sex. So they just couldn't take it. And they walked away and never came back. And then Hare Guru described this incident in his Hare Krishna explosion. There he says, he and several other devotees went to Prabhupada and told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you know, it is not strategic to talk ill about sex or in hippie land, in Haight-Ashbury or in the Bowery. So he gave an example to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, it is like telling a person to fast when everybody around him is feasting. You know, on Ekadashi or Janmashtami we had recently, on Nirjala Ekadashi, everybody is fasting, we also can fast. But if everybody around is feasting, then to fast is extremely difficult. So he said, everybody else was indulging in sex, and to tell that you have to give up sex, he said, it's not possible. Prabhupada, you will drive everyone away. So Prabhupada said, I have not come here to please the Americans. I have come here to please Krishna. And Prabhupada was sympathetic, but uncompromising. And then when I read this, it struck me very much. Because all the struggles of Srila Prabhupada before he went abroad were still in my mind. Just recently I read the 7th volume of Prabhupada Lila Amrut, that is the Prabhupada Lila. So there is described how much Prabhupada struggled. Now, 1965 Prabhupada went, 66 he started ISKCON. Towards 66 and 67 he fell sick. He had to come back to India. 68 he went back again. So he had not got an American visa. So he had to go to Canada. And from Canada, he took a flight from Montreal, he had to go to Santa Fe. So the flight was via Chicago. So Chicago had, and Prabhupada, because his continent has so much money at that time, Prabhupada had to travel alone. So Srila Prabhupada got down at the O'Hare Airport in Chicago. It's a big airport. Actually, later on, when Tripurari Maharaj was preaching in O'Hare Airport, Prabhupada told him, you know, you can go and tell the airport authorities that the name of the airport was O'Hare. So, O and H-A-R-E, Hare. So, Hare is also Hare. So, Prabhupada told them, you already got the half the name of God. Put the full name of God there. Rename the airport as O Hare Krishna Airport. So, Tripura Maharaj thought that Prabhupada is joking. Prabhupada said, why are you not going? He was just dumbfounded. He said, go and tell them. Prabhupada, they will not listen. That is not your problem. You go and tell them. So, then he actually went and told them. So, that time, of course, we had no airport distribution. We didn't have any books also at that time, 1966. The Macmillan Gita was 1968. The Macmillan Gita was just in the process of being published. So Prabhupada got down at the airport. He had to go down. His luggage was going to be taken by the airport, but he had to carry his handbag. And he had to go down several flights, up and down, and to the place where the next flight was. There's a lot of crowd, something like what we have on the railway stations in Mumbai. Not as bad, but quite a bit. And as Prabhupada was going down a long flight of stairs, suddenly somebody pushed him. And he lost his balance and he just fell and rolled down. It was like almost 12-15 steps. Prabhupada fell and rolled down. His bag went off. Prabhupada's head was bleeding. Prabhupada's arms were bruised. And nobody stopped. People were just busy in their own work. Finally, one gentleman, he came to Prabhupada. And as he was about to lift Prabhupada, Prabhupada himself got up. He asked, are you all right? Prabhupada said, yes. And then Prabhupada just picked up his bag. It had all got opened up. There's no one to help him. He tied it up and he had fixed it and he rushed. He got into the flight just in time. And as he was in the flight, he looked, you know, the wounds in his face and his hand had clotted already. And Prabhupada remembered, just before he left Montreal, one reporter had interviewed him. And he had asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, when you preach, do you face any opposition, any problems in your preaching? So Prabhupada, I never face any problems, because Krishna is there with me to solve all problems. So Prabhupada remembered that. And Prabhupada continued his preaching. So when he got down at Santa Fe, the devotee was supposed to receive him, told him that Prabhupada, our temple doesn't have any money to host you or to arrange any programs for you, so kindly go ahead to Los Angeles. So Prabhupada was shocked. Prabhupada said, he couldn't believe his own eyes. You know, he had come, he didn't tell them what had happened, how he had fallen and how he was bruised. He had come there for preaching at an old age, sacrificing his health and risking his life. And here, the temple that has invited him is telling him, you know, some of us who go for traveling preaching, imagine if we come to a temple and there at the entrance itself we are told, no, please go away. And at least there can be some sensible reason, you know, the program was cancelled. He said, we have no money, so please go away. So Prabhupada was so, in one sense, taken aback. He said, if you didn't want me to come here, why did you invite me? And there was that Mataji over here. So Mataji started crying. And she said, Prabhupada, it is so difficult to understand what Krishna wants us to do in this situation. What does Krishna want us to do in this situation? So Prabhupada got angry. Prabhupada said, Krishna wants to know what you want to do in this situation. Krishna wants to know what you want to do in this situation. So actually, then finally Prabhupada said, I cannot go tonight. You arrange for in a hotel for me to stay. The temple was about 1.5-2 hours drive away. So that Mataji went around and she tried to find a hotel. And she came back after 45 minutes. And she told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, actually all the hotels are very expensive. Please carry on to Los Angeles. So Prabhupada got really angry. And then Prabhupada said, I cannot go today. And there was another devotee with her, one Prabhuji. And Prabhupada told her, why did you invite me here? And finally he said, Prabhupada, let us go to the temple. Yes, Prabhupada, that's what I wanted. And then they went to the temple and there was a board. Welcome, Prabhupada. Welcome, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada for the first time smiled after coming to Santa Fe. So, yes, so you wanted me to come, didn't you? He asked that Mataji and she started crying. So later on, Prabhupada found out that what had happened was that Santa Fe was like a hill station place, the place where the temple was. And that Mataji, from the time she had come there to preach, she had fallen sick. And she thought that Prabhupada has just come from India, he has fallen sick, so Prabhupada will also fall sick if he comes here. And therefore, she did not want Prabhupada to come there. And so she cooked up this whole story that we don't have any money. And you know, so Prabhupada was so annoyed, but Prabhupada was so compassionate, Prabhupada did not speak one word of chastisement to her. Prabhupada just said, you know, she is sick doesn't mean everyone else is sick. Now she is so sick that even if she goes back to Godhead, she will stay sick there. Prabhupada just made a joke out of the whole thing and left the whole thing over there. But you know, so Prabhupada had to face so much difficulties because of his old age, because of traveling, because of untrained disciples, and because of hostile governments, because of enemies of ISKCON. We know in Juhu how much Prabhupada had to struggle against Mr. N. So here, Prabhupada is struggling, exerting his full energy to go and give a message to people. And that means obviously he wants people to hear the message and he wants people to follow the message. But at the same time, what is the message? The message is give up illicit sex. The message is something which will drive people away. So Prabhupada was telling, Hare Guru Prabhu, I have come here not to please the Americans but to please Krishna. So this contrast is very striking. Prabhupada is struggling, risking his life to go to people. And when people are coming to them, he is giving a message that will drive them away. So if Prabhupada wanted followers, you know, why didn't he give a populist message? Why didn't he give a message that could have made him popular? Because Prabhupada was not a populist. You know, Anuttam Prabhu writes in one of his Vyas Puja offerings to Srila Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, you gave up his hope that lust, that the human spirit, which is so prone to degradation, is reformable by the power of bhakti. That lust is a disease, but it is a curable disease. So Prabhupada was like a doctor. Now who could see that people are suffering. I'll give you an example of Red Cross. So at least when people are wounded in the battlefield, they know that they are wounded and they are in pain. But the nature of Rajoguna, the nature of lust is that it makes people sick, it keeps people perpetually dissatisfied and agitated, but it doesn't make them feel that I am sick. You think I am enjoying, or I will just enjoy soon in the future. So Prabhupada, as a compassionate doctor, could see that everybody is sick, everybody is suffering because of material desires. Prabhupada writes in one purport in the Bhagavatam that people are suffering from material pleasures and pains in this material world. People are suffering from not just material pains, but material pleasures also. Because material pleasure, what is the pleasure? It's like scratching the itch. That scratching the itch will worsen the eventual pain. So people are suffering material pleasures and suffering material pains. So Prabhupada was like a compassionate doctor who could see that people are suffering. And naturally, he wanted to go and give them the medicine. But at the same time, he knew that if people had to be cured, they had to stop sickening themselves by taking wrong stimuli. Just like if a patient has diabetes, there are two doctors. One doctor says that, okay, you take this medicine and you have to give up eating sweets. And the other doctor says, you take this medicine and whether you give up sweets or not, it doesn't matter. Obviously, who will become more popular? The second doctor. That's why those spiritual teachers who don't talk about restraining the senses, you know, they may get relatively more followers. When Prabhupada came to India, Swami Chinmayananda was here. There, Swami Nikhilananda was there. And they both appreciated in private conversations that Swamiji is teaching very pure yoga. They also knew that actually one has to give up sense gratification. But they did not have the courage to tell that because then people would go away. So, on one side, a doctor who tells, you don't need to give up sugar, you just take the medicine, he'll become more popular. But will he cure the people? No, the patient will never get cured. So similarly, we see that there are many people who follow spiritual life for many years, sometimes decades, and still they are still under the modes of passion and ignorance. The difference between a diabetic patient and a lust patient is that actually the diabetic patient has experienced health sometime in the past. And so, if the medicine is not working, he knows that this medicine is not working, I have to become healthy. But unfortunately for us, you know, freedom from lust, freedom from material desire is something we have experienced so long ago in the spiritual world that we don't even remember what it means to be free from lust. That's why at our stage, what is a spiritually sick state and what is a spiritually healthy state? We don't know the difference only. That's why people think, oh, I am doing some yoga, I am chanting some mantra, I am worshipping some deity. And I am also a spiritualist. Maine bhi guru kiya hai. People speak like that. But actually, they are not being cured. The material attachments are not going away. But Srila Prabhupada, why was he so uncompromising? Because he did not want followers. He wanted followers who were cured. He just did not want to increase his profile. I have so many followers. He wanted to help people. He wanted to benefit people. And he knew if people had to be benefited, then they have to give up sense gratification. And Prabhupada created facilities by which now we could have ashrams where devotees can stay separate from the society and they can practice strict rules of celibacy. Now we see Chaitanya Charitamrita says that there are two kinds of bad association. One is Yoshit Sangat and Tat Sangat. That one is the association of women, and the second is association of men who are attached to women. Now if you think about it, who else is left in the material world? Either there are women or there are men attached to women. So whom do we associate with? That's why we need the association of pure devotees or those who are aspiring for purity. Without that, there is no hope for us. So when Srila Prabhupada has given us a facility to have separation of the sexes, we should not, in the name of modernization, relax the rules that Prabhupada has made and have free mixing. Then we will ourselves never be cured. And we will have to keep suffering in the material world. And of course, Krishna consciousness is not just about restricting the senses. It is about engaging the senses. We have to engage our senses. And when we engage our senses positively, then we will forget material desires. We have to have lots and lots of engagement. So, once Srila Prabhupada had come to London, I think it was 1971 or 72, at that time preaching had taken off through George Harrison in London, in Germany, in France. The preaching was going on very wonderfully. So at that time Prabhupada came there, and there was one devotee, Ishana Prabhu, who reports this, who tells this pastime, that so Prabhupada was asking all the devotees. So how is the preaching? So Bhagawan, how is the preaching going on in France? Shivananda, how is the preaching going on in Germany and different parts? And everybody was giving their reports, and Prabhupada was so happy. And Ishana Prabhu was thinking, you know, everybody has something to do for Srila Prabhupada, but I don't have anything to do. So then he went to Prabhupada and asked him, Prabhupada, can you give me something to do for you? So Prabhupada replied, what would you like to do for Krishna? I said, anything, whatever you tell me, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, understand our philosophy. What would you like to do for Krishna? So he said, yeah, he said, I had never thought like this. What would I like to do for Krishna? And he started thinking. And he said, Prabhupada, I'll think about it. Prabhupada said, yes. Prabhupada writes in one purport that so many previous acharyas are described. And you know, when we go in for the DTs, how we should take darshan, how we should meditate on the lotus feet, what we can remember, they have composed beautiful prayers, are describing the beauty of the lotus feet, the beauty of the lotus face of the Lord. But Prabhupada is so practical. Prabhupada says, what is Krishna consciousness? He said, when you come in front of the deities, if you feel that the deities are asking you, what are you doing for me? Then you are Krishna conscious. Such a practical and powerful explanation of Krishna consciousness. Nothing esoteric, nothing mystical. When we come in front of the deities are asking us, what are you doing for me? What service are you doing for me? So if we feel like that when we come in front of the deities, Prabhupada says, we are Krishna conscious. Because all those things, meditating on the lotus feet, meditating on the lotus face, memorizing Sanskrit verses about, those things are fine. But ultimately, we are not just Sanskrit sloka memorizers, we are not scholars, we are servants. And we are servants of the Lord's will. So Prabhupada was so practical and so powerful. You know, when we come in front of Radharas Bihari, what are you doing for me? Radharas Bihari are asking us. So then Ishan Prabhu came back next day. He told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you know, we have these clay mridangas. They break very quickly. And because at that time, transportation was not so fast, Jodi would not travel so much. So he said, I'm thinking I'll make artificial mridangas. Mridangas with artificial material. And so that even if they, so that they will not break so easily. Prabhupada said, very good. You know, your God brothers are very passionate. So make the mridanga in such a way that even if they throw the mridanga down, it will not break. And then he says, that became, this pastime comes in the Veda base, that interaction became the seed of his lifelong service to Krishna. And he made thousands of mridangas like that. So Prabhupada is giving us a very important instruction here that Prabhupada said, understand our philosophy. What do you want to do for Krishna? What do you want to do for Krishna? So our philosophy means, sometimes we think that if my spiritual master comes and gives me an instruction, then it will be so nice, lifelong I will do that and follow that instruction. Like Prabhupada was given by Bhakti Sanskrit Thakur, go and preach in the Western countries. So like that, if I get an instruction, it will be so nice. Yeah, if we get an instruction, that's wonderful. But, you know, our movement is so big and the spiritual master has to take care of so many disciples, he may not be able to give one instruction to each disciple individually. And often, nowadays, the spiritual masters hesitate to give instructions because they don't know how much this disciple is surrendered. They give an instruction and the disciple doesn't follow, then it will become the second offense. So that is disobeying the spiritual master. So, if we have an instruction, we should cherish the instruction. But if we don't have an instruction, we should not think, oh, I don't have any service, what should I do? Actually, for a serious devotee, a serious follower of Srila Prabhupada will always be self-motivated. Self-motivated. That means, you know, all of us should think, what can I do for Krishna? We look at the movement and we see what services are required. We look at our own selves and see what talents I have. And then we should think of, what is my service to Krishna? If all of us, you know, many of us are brahmacharis here, if we had not joined full-time, then probably we would have been working hard to build a career. And in our career, we would not wait for instructions of someone. You know, what I should do to get a promotion, what I should do to get a pay hike, what I should do to improve my career profile. No, we would be racking our own brains to do that. So, Devamrata Maharaj said in one lecture, now why should Krishna get any less from us than what our material boss got in the past? You know, our material boss, we worked so hard for him. So why should Krishna get any less? So, you know, we should take initiative. Just as we would have taken initiative in our material life to think of how I can advance in my material life. Similarly, it is for us to take initiative. How can I advance in my spiritual life? What service? Even if no service is given to me, I can read scripture. I can go and so many people come. Let me go and talk with them, preach to them. Let me go and do programs. You know, if we have training, fine. Even if we don't have training, just start something, Krishna will give empowerment. A devotee should not feel that somebody has to come and give me a service, then I will do it. Of course, if somebody has given service, we should do that service. We should not do things whimsically. But in addition to the service that we are given, you know, all of us should feel an inspiration that I want to do something for Krishna. The day I die, when I will go back to Krishna, hopefully we will go back to Krishna. But even if we don't go back to Krishna, we look back at our life, you should be able to feel, Krishna, this was my offering of my life to you. This was what I did for you. The best I could do for you. And if all of us have that, all of us can think in our hearts and find out, what can be my life's offering to Krishna? It does not have to be anything great, anything imposing. But according to our capacity. Now every one of us, if you want to, Prabhupada was self-motivated. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur gave one instruction, and sometimes, you know, we say that you have to follow up when an instruction is given. But how much follow-up did Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur do? Only one letter after that. So one oral instruction and one written instruction. And that's all. And Prabhupada took that as his life's mission. So Prabhupada has given us not just one oral, one written instruction, thousands of oral lectures and thousands of written instructions. So we can just take one of them. I'll just conclude with this one point. Now I was talking with Dhruta Karma Prabhu when he had come to Pune. So he is not from a scientific background. But he got into scientific preaching. So I asked him, how did you get into scientific preaching? So he said, I read Prabhupada's books over and over. And I felt that Prabhupada wanted this evolution theory to be countered. So I took up that as an instruction of my life. Now you notice, this is not an instruction that Prabhupada gave directly to him. He had very little direct contact with Prabhupada. But he said, I took that instruction as my life's mission. And now he has become an internationally famous scientist. And there are movies done about his work, and there are television interviews, and you know, till recently he didn't even have a PhD. He had no practical science background, but he became a tremendously successful preacher. So he was telling that Prabhupada's books are filled with jewels. What are the jewels? The jewels are not just a jewel-like descriptions of Krishna's beauty. Those we can find in Anandavan Champu and Gopal Champu, they are wonderful. We can read them. But the jewels that are there in Prabhupada's books are the instructions of what we can do to spread his mission. And he said, I have just taken one such jewel, and that jewel has completely enriched my life. So, you know, when we read Srila Prabhupada's books, let us also pray that he reveal one such jewel to us, that he give us some service which we feel inspired about, which we feel that we can take up and do with whatever little talents we have. And then, as Prabhupada says here, you know, we will just go beyond the reach of lust. Of course, I am a struggling sadhaka, and whatever I have spoken, it's easy to speak, much more difficult to practice. But this is what Prabhupada has given us as a legacy. And Prabhupada, when we are absorbed in such service to Krishna, then material desires just fall away. And then we can happily march forward, back home, back to Godhead. So I'll quickly summarize. I started by talking about how the example of Narad Muni, Lord Shiva, and Srila Prabhupada is to preach to influential people, Lord Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita also, so that they can influence many, many other people. The example of Red Cross doctors. Then I talked about the specific preaching strategy here, telling a beautiful story, and a story for what purpose? To raise a person from aparadharma to paradharma. Even if a person materially is very successful, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Bhulya Tomare, person goes abroad, earns money, takes care of his family, still he's a spiritual failure. Unless he develops his relationship with Krishna. And then we discussed, why is Prabhupada so heavy about restricting association with the opposite sex? So I described how, on one side, Prabhupada was so uncompromising, driving potential devotees, potential leaders away from our movement by his classes. On the other side, Prabhupada was so struggling so much, falling from a staircase alone in a crowded airport, just so that he could reach and preached to people who told him that we don't have money to arrange programs for you. So what kind of sacrifice was this? So Prabhupada was like a doctor who very compassionately wanted to cure patients, but he knew to cure, the patients have to follow some prohibitions. So he was not hesitant to tell the prohibitions. And then lastly we discuss, Krishna consciousness is not just about prohibitions, it is also about prescriptions. And the prescription is not just chanting and coming for the morning program, but the prescription is, we should feel, what can I do for Krishna? So Prabhupada's books are filled with jewels. We take up one such jewel and make that, this is my service to Krishna. This is my life's offering to Krishna. Then that will give us so much nectar that we'll go far beyond the temptations of this material world. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Taigaur Premanande. Hari Hari.